Gibbon describes how they overran and devastated Russia. Let me pause a minute. This is tape number 2 on November the 14th, 1992. For more than 200 years, to 1480, Russia lay crushed beneath the Mongol rule. Russia was, in fact, Mongolized from end to end. Latham points out that a considerable mixture of the two races took place, showing itself in their language, features, and bodily appearance. Even the Mongol tent formed the basis of their architecture down to the days of Peter the Great. Thus, to sum up, the Russian Empire not only includes within its bounds nearly the whole of the Mongol area, but from the two great invasions, that of Attila and that of Genghis, the latter resulting in a subjugation lasting upwards of two centuries, the whole of the vast expanse now governed by the Bolshevik minority from Moscow is saturated with Mongol blood and Mongol manners. The Russian Empire is the land of Magog. Ezekiel's Gog is thrice described, verses 2, 3 of the 38th chapter, verse 1 of the 39th, in the authorized English version as chief prince of the two peoples next named. King James divines were rather doubtful about this rendering, so inserted in the margin, or the prince of the chief. These marginal notes were inserted to show that, while they would not necessarily disturb any form of word with which the earlier English version had made the people familiar, they preferred the renderings thus suggested. Hatton's comment, please read that again. Preferred? What could this possibly mean to the full content of possibility of some tit-tat of tempering? This particular suggestion they took from Jerome's Latin Vulgate. He had written in this passage, Principum capitas, because the Hebrew word rush bore the meaning head. 500 years previously, the Greek Jewish divines of Alexandria had boldly inserted the name instead of its supposed meaning. So, in the Septuagint version, we read a bunch of Greek, which I can't read.
Which your typewriters aren't going to spell either.
Which I think translates into, quote, ruler of Rush. The early German versions said the same. It was only in England that we had to wait for the revised version of 1885 to read in their own tongue, Prince of Rush. Let us now consider the name, Rush. The learned Hebrew linguist, Jesenius, remarks upon the world. This will have to be drawn in Greek letters. In Ezekiel 38:2-39:1, that it is a proper name, undoubtedly answering to the name of Russia, the more so that the first mention of the Russians in the writings of Byzantine and Arabian authors of the 10th century is under the very form adopted by the LXX, namely Greek, more Greek. Quote, that famous name, writes Dr. Wilhelm Thomson, professor of comparative philology in the University of Copenhagen, in his celebrated lectures delivered at the Taylor Institution, Oxford, in May 1876, on the relations between ancient Russia and Scandinavia and the origin of the Russian state, first appears in Greek and Latin writers of the 9th century in the shape of an indeclinable word, the Rus, as if it stood for some unintelligible abstraction. It soon became familiar at Constantinople as the name of the sea rovers, those fleets from the rivers of the Black Sea, insulted and threatened the great capital. The ninth chapter of the work of the Emperor Constantine, Porphyrogenitus, on the administration of the Eastern Empire, written about the year 950, is entitled About the Rose and Who Came from Russia to Constantinople with Their Boats. These boats, the emperor tells us, canoes indeed, they might be translated, the Greek word employed meaning made out of a single trunk, started from Outer Russia, assembling below Kiev in order to pass in company that long series of rapids which the Dnieper forms for a distance of 50 miles. The imperial author gives the name of these rapids both in Slavonic and in Russian. The Russian words are pure Scandinavian. Not only this, but all the members of the Russian royal family, the House of Kurik, as well as the Russian noblemen or private persons who are mentioned in the early chronicles, have pure Scandinavian names. Kurik and his fellows were as much Northmen as those who forced their way into the British Isles. The Rus were undoubtedly Norman. We have seen that Rosh was the earliest form of the Russian name. Rosh does not occur with Magog and the rest of the catalog of the sons of Japhet in Genesis 10. But this name does occur in Genesis 21, in the line of Shem, the chosen line through Eber to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, being given as one of the sons of Benjamin, one of the tribes of Israel. Benjamin, we British Israelites have been in the habit of identifying as the ancestor of the Normans.
Now note, he just used the term British Israelite. And one of the first real bombastic, nasty repercussions Dorma had to face was when we wrote on British Israel. You ones have got to get your history. And I know it's boring, but if I don't make you go through this, you get it back that, well, you expect us to believe anything. I mean, after all, a child can now look at a map and say, there is no such place as Constantinople. There's no such place as Persia. All right, you have a Persian Gulf. What happened to Persia? Was it Ceylon? Was it Sri Lanka? What was Persia? What happened to Constantinople? Well, they called it Istanbul.
Wrote a song about it.
True. It's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Correct or incorrect, Wally?
Correct.
I'm on a roll. I can do my ABCs too. I know it's hard. I would only ask you once, who do spend time with your children in the history books at all, that you touch on these things, especially if their little inquiring minds dig at you a little. I know that it's boring, but how else are you going to find what you are and who you are and who is your enemy? It's all very visible around you, but the human mind cannot accept it. Go ahead, please.
If this identification be correct, and Scandinavia was largely settled by that particular Hebrew tribe, then Rosh has been an element of Israel left in Russia, first as founders and rulers of the Russian state, then as a remnant reduced to subjection by Mongolized Russia. So Gog is now Prince of Rosh. Hatton's comment. Come on, Chilas, don't skip over this material. Go back and read it again until it is cemented in your brains. Yes, I do know that Rosh Hoshana is tripping through on little Santa wings. So let's just work our way through this, please. I had two suggestions as to the identity of Rosh as an Israelite element in modern Russia. Number one, that the Scandinavian aristocracy in Finland is Rosh, and their privileges we now know have been filched from them by the Tsar and his bureaucracy. That, number two, that the Ruthenian population of the southern part of Western Russia bordering on Galicia and Romania are Rosh. There is a possibility that the Ruth of Ruthenia is derived from the Rus of the Scandinavian founders of Russia, and they do occupy our old early European home in Arzareth. Incidentally, in this connection, I may mention that about a month before the war, a British Israelite lady in London wrote to me that she was coming to Penzance, that's spelled P-E-N-Z-A-N-C-E, and might she introduce us to a Ruthenian friend. She enclosed a pamphlet by him in which he showed that the Ruthenian population of Russia would infinitely prefer to be incorporated with the Ruthenians of Galicia under Austrian rule. Then came the war. Russia was our ally. The visit to Penzance never came off, and we never made the acquaintance of our Ruthenian. Where precisely Rosh is to be located within the limits of mighty Russian time will show. The Tsars have gone. Lenin and his Bolsheviks rule Russia. Lenin may die and Trotsky or some heathen triumvirate may reign in his stead. Hindenburg may step in, or perhaps the Russian representative of the Napoleons, or some other military dictator. The old Russian realm, from the borders of Finland, Lithuania, and Poland to Kamchatka and Vladivostok, is theirs, whoever they may be. The Rus may have been exterminated, but the name of Russia survives. Gog, the slave driver of all the Russians, will be... That's a funny way to end it, but that's the way to end it. Will be. Okay, will be.
Will be.
End of quoting for this segment, please.
So, Mongolia, and the Mongolian lineage is Magog. You have to face the fact that Russia is Gog. And now it would make a little bit more sense to you when the great war, gets underway. I think it will be more easily defined in your mind as the prophecies are unfolded, that ones in Israel, for instance, will be pushed down into Turkey. But you're going to have Libya, aren't you? Giving a whole heck of a lot of problem in that area against those Israelites. Because by that time, probably Libya will have encroached greatly into Egypt, I mean into Turkey. As the Russian element, or Gog, presses southerly, it will then again match your prophecies, and the bear to the north from the land of Gog and further to the land of Magog. and as the great battles are enjoined. Those masses and hordes of Mongolians will sweep across and come across the Euphrates. So it looks good for you, doesn't it, sitting in America? Does it really? With a Gargian missile going to land 5 days from Monday?
Is that off of Washington, D.C.?
No.
Washington
State. They just want a little industry. They want a little money. You know, a little joint venture going. How many millions of dollars does it cost to launch such a project as this that you're paying for? You pay for it either way, Americans. Either way. And the whole thing is a lie. Everything about it is a lie. Except the capability of doing it. And they're going to show you.
You know, we have a lot of military bases up in Washington.
Oh, yes.
Nuclear type.
Right.
And what if they turn those loose on the Russians?
They'll just turn bigger ones loose on you. The war may start sooner than you anticipate.
Not very good for us.
But this does make sense, doesn't it? To understand the training programs in the underground facilities across Washington, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah. You're already infiltrated. They're already jointly training. You can pick up any paper on any day and you'll find an article about it. Right now in Bakersfield, there's a whole group of Russians. And for several years now, you've had integration of the training programs of the KGB in your police departments, right in your local sheriff's department. Well, who's teaching who what? Hot dog, there's the good one. The Israelis, the Mossad is teaching you both. You cannot tell anymore what is the CIA from the KGB. I don't care what you call them. You have a new United Nations force. And you're going to find out that Bill Clinton, William Clinton is not his name. He's a direct lineage of Rockefeller. And that good old name of Blythe. Fascinating if you read and learn your history and look at your geography. It should also make it more understandable why the bases of your alien brothers are going to be located in places such as the Philippines, because those are the areas of old Lemuria, and in areas then to the east of you in the Atlantic area around and in old Atlantis, because you see atmospherians live better underwater than they do above water. So what of those Orion nasties? What about them? You don't need to worry about those aliens. because the code or the law of the cosmos and universal law is that they may not touch you if you demand that they not touch you in the name of God Creator, because God Creator holds the higher rank of any being, any time, ever coming to your place. And you're going to have Steiger try to tell you that the human was an error. God doesn't make errors. They're going to try to tell you in some kind of conjunctive way with the Manhattan experiment that somehow the reptilians ended up kind of, you know, cloning or coming up with the humanoid being. Well, I'll say this much. The reptilian element, or the serpent people, don't misunderstand and think that this means they're full of scales and look like lizards. It is the sign of the adversary, the dragon and the serpent. My symbol is the phoenix. The bird of birds. The one that creates from nothing save the ruins and the ashes. You're not a mud pie. I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry about this one too, guys. Eve is not your rib. You're meeting your enemies and your friends. You're going to find that the Russian from those tribes of Shem are going to be your brother. You're also going to find that there are some remarkable, learned and brilliant beings running most of those cosmospheres. That does not mean that you're going to fare very well, friends, when this battle starts. You live here among the adversary tools. You're in good shape if you're in good with God, because we can lift you out. But a nuclear bomb is not selective unless you put your shield around you. And then it can be just as selective as anything else, except the blast will blow you away. So in your beingness, I'll just sit and be a perfect me. You're going to get blown away and ascend very rapidly. And your lessons in ascension will have paid off if you can find yourself. That's your problem. Everybody's out there looking for themselves. Well, for goodness sakes, if you can't find yourself all in one piece, how are you going to find yourself into myriads, hundreds of billions of pieces? God gave you a brain. That was the greatest creation of all, because it was in total likeness of that which were the thought energy patterns of the God Source. And he says to all of us that come later, get your act together. And let's assume some responsibility. You're perfection. And you shouldn't have any trouble with snakes, snails, lizards, or frogs. But they're sure going to give you a headache all along the way. They're going to try to take your property, and you need the property as much as you can hold on to, so that you can physically survive to do any of the rest of the task in this manifested play you've got going. And a lot of you want to cut out of it because something at a level just barely under the surface now says, I know better. I know how this works. And I know that when I accept my truth and my knowingness, it's over. And it is. That's what knowing is. Once you come into total knowing, it's over. It's done. You recognize the entire thing. And you are in immediately a different experience of knowing. Up until that point, you've got to search until you find and grow until it becomes your soul journey. And fudging doesn't cut it. I think you do have to fake it until you find it. And then when you find it, you better hang on very, very tightly. But your agreement is, as an elder teacher, elder, L-E-L, that is a spring off of Elohim, which is God. So you represent the elder brother, and you have to assume your responsibility as the guide you are. And you must honor that commitment that you won't just say, hey, I know, and I know that I know, and I'm out of here. Supposing I allowed Dorma to do that today because she got a bad headache over that property that is just an anathema to her now. Is no different than it was yesterday. It may be different today than it will be tomorrow. But you've only got this moment. And you're sitting here with me. So this moment's pretty secure, isn't it? Or it gets better. Is not easy in the human form to have accepted this responsibility, because part of your testing is, what are you willing to give up? What part can you give up? And I will pat her on the head and I will repeat to you once, doesn't have anything to do with that property. She would like to keep it. It's a proper size, and they've acquired the things that you will need for large groups. It's comfortable, it's lovely, and those are the pleasurable things that should be pleasurable in this experience to you. It gives you the drive in the physical form to continue. If you are happy in the gutter, you have no reason to get out of it. But, sir and madam, if I am coming to call, I hope that I am worthy of more than the gutter curb. Because you were created and projected in perfection and capability. If you cannot gain more than that because of your journey and your lessons and for whatever reason you're experiencing, that does not mean you are lesser. It simply means that your experience is different. And if that be your plight, the gutter curb is quite soft enough for me. But to refuse to be better and to acquire the abundance that is God, just for show and tell, is not impressive one iota to God. It means you have denied Him and the abundance that He offers. So it isn't the things. It is the mammoth, incredible job of what in the world do you do with it? How do you get it vacated? Because you'll need it later. What do you do with an aviary full of birds who know no other home? Or, for that matter, the hundreds of birds and wildlife that comes to eat at the table of these ones. And yet the plum has got to be big enough to hold on to. Do you see God works in such strange ways? The contradiction facing these ones and thus you ones. You have no right to simply turn and walk away, because it's needed. It's needed. But you jolly well better play the game. John and Claudia have a trailer full of tents. If it comes to Tuesday and there's no word, I would ask that two or three of those big barracks tents be brought into the vacant lot next door and set up, preferably with the press present. Are you going to move anything into it? I certainly hope not. But I want nothing left to chance. This is another thing that you ones must do, and that is investigate every detail. Read the documents carefully. The sheriff says, if you are not vacated by 10 a.m. on Wednesday the 18th, we will physically remove you from the property. They mean it. Then they go on and say that they will take all of the belongings, and to get them back, you have to pay storage. And if you don't, then they confiscate it and sell it at public auction. But hear the word storage. Perhaps the storage would not be any more than 2 or 3 days of an attorney's fees, for goodness sakes. And then there is another alternative. If the property is used for the storage, then you must pay storage fees, which is the equivalent of the rental value for 15 days. So you have two ways after the fact before they can literally confiscate personal property. And I'm talking about personal property now. Furniture, clothing, this sort of thing. This is, if you come right to 10 o'clock and the sheriff's there and they haul you away, you have still 15 days if you pay them storage fees to get it out. On the other hand, there may be some precious things that you will want to get out in advance if it comes right down to the wire. So read the details and then see what is the most valid action to take. You see, these nitwits are struggling to hide the fact that the RTC is totally bankrupt. The banks will be closing one after another like dominoes very, very shortly. Anyone with sums in the bank, I don't even know what to tell you to do with them if you don't get them invested in something. And what in the deuce are you going to get them invested in? Everything is attached to the banks. So you better get them invest your funds invested against gold. And most ones have not provided a program to do that. I provided it, and I'm so sick of it for my people that I hesitate to even mention it. Your alternative is to lose it or to lose it. A big deal, isn't it? And yet what they really want is $45,000. They don't even want the $45,000. They just don't want to get their assets canned by the RTC, because this has been a bed of roses for attorneys. It has been rip-off filth, only surpassed by the stealth program. This is where the rich get richer and buy property for cents on the dollar at your expense after they confiscate it into the RTC. And this has been 4 years of total unconstitutionality. These ones have been 4 years into this and have never had a hearing, have never yet been recognized in the court of law. And so far, no way to force it. So they sit and smile and summarily rule against you, hoping that if they can get you out of the property, the battle will be won. With 500 houses empty in this valley, do you think they really want that property? Or they care that the property will simply deteriorate, decline, and be vandalized? No, that's not what they want either. They want a bond that says out there when you're ruled against and you lose, they have at least been covered. But even that would come back. So it represents nothing other than the ability of these ones to put up the money. And they already borrowed against the house on the contingency that they get the house, which eventually they will do. Because if it ever gets to a trial by jury where it should have been 8 or 10 times already, they're going to lose and they know it. They can't afford to let it get to a jury. But I honor them. And I hear both their hearts. And they say, hey, Dad, Daddy, it's okay. You know, we're grateful. We're grateful. We're grateful for the 5 years we've had here. We're grateful for the shelter and what we've been allowed to have. And instead of paying rentals on the property, they've been paying attorneys twice as much. But it's worked out. You've made it this far. And when the decision came whether to put more into the Constitutional Law Center or into the Word, they chose that and gambled on being against this day. So there are a couple of options. One, a writ will be filed on Monday with the Supreme Court of the United States demanding a stay, because there are at least three issues at point that by the mere fact that they happened in a court of law demanded instant stoppage, instant stay, and a hearing by a jury. Now, the other half of the Cassie story is equally as interesting, possibly. Cassie has an ex-husband. Their friendship has only grown through the years. He has remarried, and they have a child. But guess what? God works in mysterious ways. Their friendship as people has grown to the point that he and his wife and child are coming to live with her in this village. What does that mean? It means he is a handyman. He's good at everything from electrical engineering to you name it. He is extremely, extremely sharp with everything relating to computers, bulletin boards, repair, you name it, he does it. And his full thrust through these years has been constitutional law. You've got brothers sitting in prisons all over this nation. You got a hairy petition yesterday on the phones of one who's been arrested. The wife is left destitute and she does not know where even to turn while the IRS has him in prison. You're going to find that your prison system is just like the confounded IRS. It is a private corporate business. It's nice to get a bunch of you hard workers into prison. Then you can do work. And you think Chinese prisoners do work that is sold abroad? You don't even take it abroad. Does it flow back into the prison system? Don't be silly. Well, aren't we just a bundle of joy and revelation? Well, you ones haven't done much of anything over the last few centuries, but get deeper in it. I believe Perot calls it voodoo. And he had no idea. You must put your patience to work. You must put yourself on hold before you speak or rant or rave or accuse and most especially judge. I got my ears trimmed with a massive missile 2 days ago from one who had read a couple of Liberators, and boy, I sure did need to ship up. Shape up, or ship out, or whatever. And I could be nicer in the way I tell you. Well, I did that too. For a whole year, I ground your food, I held your hand, and I put it in your little face. Can't do it anymore, Chilas. You see, I could do that for the ones who would then scatter it farther. I warned you as we were becoming reintroduced. My own brothers stand around giggling, you know. Hatton has the worst reputation in the entire cosmos. of being a nasty firm commander. And nobody in the living room seemed to understand that. We just were having a great time.
Excuse me, Commander.
Profoundness.
Yes.
Is interrupted.
Gibbon describes how they overran and devastated Russia. Let me pause a minute. This is tape number 2 on November the 14th, 1992. For more than 200 years, to 1480, Russia lay crushed beneath the Mongol rule. Russia was, in fact, Mongolized from end to end. Latham points out that a considerable mixture of the two races took place, showing itself in their language, features, and bodily appearance. Even the Mongol tent formed the basis of their architecture down to the days of Peter the Great. Thus, to sum up, the Russian Empire not only includes within its bounds nearly the whole of the Mongol area, but from the two great invasions, that of Attila and that of Genghis, the latter resulting in a subjugation lasting upwards of two centuries, the whole of the vast expanse now governed by the Bolshevik minority from Moscow is saturated with Mongol blood and Mongol manners. The Russian Empire is the land of Magog. Ezekiel's Gog is thrice described, verses 2, 3 of the 38th chapter, verse 1 of the 39th, in the authorized English version as chief prince of the two peoples next named. King James divines were rather doubtful about this rendering, so inserted in the margin, or the prince of the chief. These marginal notes were inserted to show that, while they would not necessarily disturb any form of word with which the earlier English version had made the people familiar, they preferred the renderings thus suggested. Hatton's comment, please read that again. Preferred? What could this possibly mean to the full content of possibility of some tit-tat of tempering? This particular suggestion they took from Jerome's Latin Vulgate. He had written in this passage, Principum capitas, because the Hebrew word rush bore the meaning head. 500 years previously, the Greek Jewish divines of Alexandria had boldly inserted the name instead of its supposed meaning. So, in the Septuagint version, we read a bunch of Greek, which I can't read.
Which your typewriters aren't going to spell either.
Which I think translates into, quote, ruler of Rush. The early German versions said the same. It was only in England that we had to wait for the revised version of 1885 to read in their own tongue, Prince of Rush. Let us now consider the name, Rush. The learned Hebrew linguist Jesenius remarks upon the world. This will have to be drawn in Greek letters. In Ezekiel 38, 2, 3, 39, 1, that it is a proper name, undoubtedly answering to the name of Russia, the more so that the first mention of the Russians in the writings of Byzantine and Arabian authors of the 10th century is under the very form adopted by the LXX, namely Greek, more Greek. Quote, that famous name, writes Dr. Wilhelm Thomsen, professor of comparative philology in the University of Copenhagen, in his celebrated lectures delivered at the Taylor Institution, Oxford, in May 1876, on the relations between ancient Russia and Scandinavia and the origin of the Russian state, first appears in Greek and Latin writers of the 9th century in the shape of an indeclinable word, the Rus, as if it stood for some unintelligible abstraction. It soon became familiar at Constantinople as the name of the sea rovers, those fleets from the rivers of the Black Sea insulted and threatened the great capital. The 9th chapter of the work of the Emperor Constantine, Porphyrogenitus, on the administration of the Eastern Empire, written about the year 950, is entitled About the Rose and Who Came from Russia to Constantinople with Their Boats. These boats, the emperor tells us, canoes indeed, they might be translated, the Greek word employed meaning made out of a single trunk, started from our Russia, assembling below Kiev in order to pass in company that long series of rapids which the Dnieper forms for a distance of 50 miles. The imperial author gives the name of these rapids both in Slavonic and in Russian. The Russian words are pure Scandinavian. Not only this, but all the members of the Russian royal family, the House of Kurik, as well as the Russian noblemen or private persons who are mentioned in the early chronicles, have pure Scandinavian names. Kurik and his fellows were as much Northmen as those who forced their way into the British Isles. The Rus were undoubtedly Norman. We have seen that Rosh was the earliest form of the Russian name. Rosh does not occur with Magog and the rest of the catalog of the sons of Japhet in Genesis 10. But this name does occur in Genesis 21, in the line of Shem, the chosen line through Eber to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, being given as one of the sons of Benjamin, one of the tribes of Israel. Benjamin, we British Israelites have been in the habit of identifying as the ancestor of the Normans.
Now note, he just used the term British Israelite, and one of the first real bombastic, nasty repercussions Dorma had to face was when we wrote on British Israel. You ones have got to get your history. And I know it's boring, but if I don't make you go through this, you get it back that, well, you expect us to believe anything. I mean, after all, a child can now look at a map and say, there is no such place as Constantinople. There's no such place as Persia. All right, you have a Persian Gulf. What happened to Persia? Was it Ceylon? Was it Sri Lanka? What was Persia? What happened to Constantinople? Well, they called it Istanbul.
Wrote a song about it.
True. It's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Correct or incorrect, Wally?
Correct.
I'm on a roll. I can do my ABCs too. I know it's hard. I would only ask you once, who do spend time with your children in the history books at all, that you touch on these things, especially if their little inquiring minds dig at you a little. I know that it's boring, but how else are you going to find what you are and who you are and who is your enemy. It's all very visible around you, but the human mind cannot accept it. Go ahead, please.
If this identification be correct, and Scandinavia was largely settled by that particular Hebrew tribe, then Rosh has been an element of Israel left in Russia, first as founders and rulers of the Russian state, then as a remnant reduced to subjection by Mongolized Russia. So Gog is now Prince of Rosh. Hatton's comment. Come on, Chilas, don't skip over this material. Go back and read it again until it is cemented in your brains. Yes, I do know that Rosh Hoshana is tripping through on little Santa wings. So let's just work our way through this, please. I had two suggestions as to the identity of Rosh as an Israelite element in modern Russia. Number one, that the Scandinavian aristocracy in Finland is Rosh, and their privileges we now know have been filched from them by the Tsar and his bureaucracy. That, number two, that the Ruthenian population of the southern part of Western Russia bordering on Galicia and Romania are Rosh. There is a possibility that the Ruth of Ruthenia is derived from the Rus of the Scandinavian founders of Russia, and they do occupy our old early European home in Arzareth. Incidentally, in this connection, I may mention that about a month before the war, a British Israelite lady in London wrote to me that she was coming to Penzance, that's spelled P-E-N-Z-A-N-C-E, and might she introduce us to a Ruthenian friend. She enclosed a pamphlet by him in which he showed that the Ruthenian population of Russia would infinitely prefer to be incorporated with the Ruthenians of Galicia under Austrian rule. Then came the war. Russia was our ally. The visit to Penzance never came off, and we never made the acquaintance of our Ruthenian. Where precisely Rosh is to be located within the limits of mighty Russian time will show. The Tsars have gone. Lenin and his Bolsheviks rule Russia. Lenin may die, and Trotsky or some heathen triumvirate may reign in his stead. Hindenburg may step in, or perhaps the Russian representative of the Napoleons, or some other military dictator. The old Russian realm, from the borders of Finland, Lithuania, and Poland to Kamchatka and Vladivostok, is theirs, whoever they may be. The Rus may have been exterminated, but the name of Russia survives. Gog, the slave driver of all the Russians, will be, that's a funny way to end it, but that's the way to end it, will be, okay, will be.
Will be.
End of quoting for this segment, please.
So, Mongolia, and the Mongolian lineage is Magog. You have to face the fact that Russia is Gog. And now it would make a little bit more sense to you when the war, the great war, the war, gets underway. I think it will be more easily defined in your mind as the prophecies are unfolded that once in Israel, for instance, will be pushed down into Turkey. But you're going to have Libya, aren't you? Giving a whole heck of a lot of problem in that area against those Israelites. because by that time probably Libya will have encroached greatly into Egypt, into Turkey. As the Russian element, or Gog, presses southerly, it will then again match your prophecies and the bear to the north from the land of Gog and further to the land of Magog. And as the great battles are enjoined, those masses and hordes of Mongolians will sweep across and come across the Euphrates. So it looks good for you, doesn't it, sitting in America? Does it really? With a Gogian missile going to land 5 days from Monday.
Is that off of Washington, D.C.?
No.
Washington
State. They just want a little industry.
You want to get going.
They want a little money. You know, a little joint venture going. How many millions of dollars does it cost to launch such a project as this that you're paying for? You pay for it either way, Americans.
Millions.
Either way. And the whole thing is a lie. Everything about it is a lie, except the capability of doing it. And they're going to show you.
You know, we have a lot of military bases up in Washington.
Oh, yes.
Nuclear type.
Right.
And what if they turn those loose on the Russians?
They'll just turn bigger ones loose on you. The war may start sooner than you anticipate.
It's not very good for us.
But this does make sense, doesn't it, to understand the training programs in the underground facilities across Washington, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah. You're already infiltrated. They're already jointly training. You can pick up any paper on any day and you'll find an article about it. Right now in Bakersfield, there's a whole group of Russians. And for several years now, you've had integration of the training programs of the KGB in your police departments, right in your local sheriff's department. Well, who's teaching who what? Hot dog, there's the good one. The Israelis, the Mossad is teaching you both. You cannot tell anymore what is the CIA from the KGB. I don't care what you call them. You have a new United Nations force. And you're going to find out that Bill Clinton, William Clinton is not his name. He's a direct lineage of Rockefeller. And that good old name of Blythe. Fascinating if you read and learn your history and look at your geography. It should also make it more understandable why the bases of your alien brothers are going to be located in places such as the Philippines, because those are the areas of old Lemuria. And in areas then to the east of you, in the Atlantic area, around and in old Atlantis, because you see, atmospherians live better underwater than they do above water. So what of those Orion nasties? What about them? You don't need to worry about those aliens, because the code or the law of the cosmos and universal law is that they may not touch you if you demand that they not touch you in the name of God Creator, because God Creator holds the higher rank of any being, any time ever coming to your place. And you're going to have Steiger try to tell you that the human was an error. God doesn't make errors. They're going to try to tell you in some kind of conjunctive way with the Manhattan experiment that somehow the reptilians ended up kind of, you know, cloning or coming up with the humanoid being. Well, I'll say this much. The reptilian element, or the serpent people, don't misunderstand and think that this means they're full of scales and look like lizards. It is the sign of the adversary, the dragon and the serpent. My symbol is the phoenix. The bird of birds. The one that creates from nothing save the ruins and the ashes. You're not a mud pie. I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry about this one too, guys. Eve is not your rib. You're meeting your enemies and your friends. You're going to find that the Russian from those tribes of Shem are going to be your brother. You're also going to find that there are some remarkable, learned and brilliant beings running most of those cosmospheres. That does not mean that you're going to fare very well, friends, when this battle starts. You live here among the adversary tools. You're in good shape if you're in good with God, because we can lift you out. But a nuclear bomb is not selective unless you put your shield around you. And then it can be just as selective as anything else, except the blast will blow you away. So in your beingness, I'll just sit and be a perfect me. You're going to get blown away and ascend very rapidly. And your lessons in ascension will have paid off. If you can find yourself. That's your problem. Everybody's out there looking for themselves. Well, for goodness sakes, if you can't find yourself all in one piece, how are you going to find yourself into myriads, hundreds of billions of pieces? God gave you a brain. That was the greatest creation of all, because it was in total likeness of that which were the thought energy patterns of the God source. And he says to all of us that come later, get your act together. And let's assume some responsibility. You're perfection. And you shouldn't have any trouble with snakes, snails, lizards, or frogs. But they're sure going to give you a headache all along the way. They're going to try to take your property, and you need the property as much as you can hold on to, so that you can physically survive to do any of the rest of the task in this manifested play you've got going. And a lot of you want to cut out of it because something at a level just barely under the surface now says, I know better. I know how this works. And I know that when I accept my truth and my knowingness, it's over. And it is. That's what knowing is. Once you come into total knowing, it's over. It's done. You recognize the entire thing. And you are in immediately a different experience of knowing. Up until that point, you've got to search until you find and grow until it becomes your soul journey. And fudging doesn't cut it. I think you do have to fake it until you find it. And then when you find it, you better hang on very, very tightly. But your agreement is, as an elder teacher, elder, L-E-L, that is a spring off of Elohim, which is God. So you represent the elder brother, and you have to assume your responsibility as the guide you are. And you must honor that commitment, that you won't just say, hey, I know, and I know that I know, and I'm out of here. Supposing I allowed Dorma to do that today, because she got a bad headache over that property that is just an anathema to her now. Is no different than it was yesterday. It may be different today than it will be tomorrow. But you've only got this moment. And you're sitting here with me. So this moment's pretty secure, isn't it? Or it gets better. Is not easy in the human form to have accepted this responsibility, because part of your testing is, what are you willing to give up? What part can you give up? And I will pat her on the head and I will repeat to you once. Doesn't have anything to do with that property. She would like to keep it. It's a proper size, and they've acquired the things that you will need for large groups. It's comfortable, it's lovely, and those are the pleasurable things that should be pleasurable in this experience to you. It gives you the drive in the physical form to continue. If you are happy in the gutter, you have no reason to get out of it. But sir and madam, if I am coming to call, I hope that I am worthy of more than the gutter curb. Because you were created and projected in perfection and capability. If you cannot gain more than that because of your journey and your lessons and for whatever reason you're experiencing, that does not mean you are lesser. It simply means that your experience is different. And if that be your plight, the gutter curb is quite soft enough for me. But to refuse to be better and to acquire the abundance that is God, just for show and tell, is not impressive one iota to God. It means you have denied Him and the abundance that He offers. So it isn't the things. It is the mammoth, incredible job of what in the world do you do with it? How do you get it vacated? Because you'll need it later. What do you do with an aviary full of birds who know no other home? Or, for that matter, the hundreds of birds and wildlife that comes to eat at the table of these ones. And yet the plum has got to be big enough to hold on to. Do you see God works in such strange ways? The contradiction facing these ones and thus you ones. You have no right to simply turn and walk away. Because it's needed. It's needed. But you jolly well better play the game. John and Claudia have a trailer full of tents. If it comes to Tuesday and there's no word, I would ask that two or three of those big barracks tents be brought into the vacant lot next door and set up, preferably with the press present. Are you going to move anything into it? I certainly hope not. But I want nothing left to chance. This is another thing that you ones must do, and that is investigate every detail. Read the documents carefully. The sheriff says, if you are not vacated by 10 a.m. on Wednesday the 18th, we will physically remove you from the property. They mean it. Then they go on and say that they will take all of the belongings, and to get them back, you have to pay storage. And if you don't, then they confiscate it and sell it at public auction. But hear the word storage. Perhaps the storage would not be any more than 2 or 3 days of an attorney's fees, for goodness sakes. And then there is another alternative. If the property is used for the storage, then you must pay storage fees, which is the equivalent of the rental value for 15 days. So you have two ways after the fact, before they can literally confiscate personal property. And I'm talking about personal property now. Furniture, clothing, this sort of thing. This is, if you come right to 10 o'clock and the sheriff's there and they haul you away, you have still 15 days if you pay them storage fees to get it out. On the other hand, there may be some precious things that you will want to get out in advance if it comes right down to the wire. So read the details and then see what is the most valid action to take. You see, these nitwits are struggling to hide the fact that the RTC is totally bankrupt. The banks will be closing one after another like dominoes very, very shortly. Anyone with sums in the bank, I don't even know what to tell you to do with them if you don't get them invested in something. And what in the deuce are you going to get them invested in? Everything is attached to the banks. So you better get them invest your funds invested against gold. And most ones have not provided a program to do that. I provided it, and I'm so sick of it for my people that I hesitate to even mention it. Your alternative is to lose it or to lose it. A big deal, isn't it? And yet what they really want is $45,000. They don't even want the $45,000. They just don't want to get their assets canned by the RTC, because this has been a bed of roses for attorneys. It has been rip-off filth, only surpassed by the stealth program. This is where the rich get richer and buy property for cents on the dollar at your expense after they confiscate it into the RTC. And this has been 4 years of total unconstitutionality. These ones have been 4 years into this and have never had a hearing, have never yet been recognized in the court of law. And so far, no way to force it. So they sit and smile and summarily rule against you, hoping that if they can get you out of the property, the battle will be won. With 500 houses empty in this valley, do you think they really want that property? Or they care that the property will simply deteriorate, decline, and be vandalized? No, that's not what they want either. They want a bond that says out there when you're ruled against and you lose, they have at least been covered. But even that would come back. So it represents nothing other than the ability of these ones to put up the money. And they already borrowed against the house on the contingency that they get the house, which eventually they will do. Because if it ever gets to a trial by jury where it should have been 8 or 10 times already, they're going to lose and they know it. They can't afford to let it get to a jury. but I honor them. And I hear both their hearts. And they say, hey, Dad, Daddy, it's okay. You know, we're grateful. We're grateful. We're grateful for the 5 years we've had here. We're grateful for the shelter and what we've been allowed to have. And instead of paying rentals on the property, they've been paying attorneys twice as much. But it's worked out. You've made it this far. And when the decision came whether to put more into the Constitutional Law Center or into the Word, they chose that and gambled on being against this day. So there are a couple of options. One, a writ will be filed on Monday with the Supreme Court of the United States demanding a stay. Because there are at least three issues at point that by the mere fact that they happened in a court of law demanded instant stoppage, instant stay, and a hearing by a jury. Now the other half of the Cassie story is equally as interesting, possibly. Cassie has an ex-husband. Their friendship has only grown through the years. He has remarried and they have a child. But guess what? God works in mysterious ways. Their friendship as people has grown to the point that he and his wife and child are coming to live with her in this village. What does that mean? It means he is a handyman. He's good at everything from electrical engineering to you name it. He is extremely, extremely sharp with everything relating to computers, bulletin boards, repair, you name it. He does it. And his full thrust through these years has been constitutional law. You've got brothers sitting in prisons all over this nation. You got a harried petition yesterday on the phones of one who's been arrested. The wife is left destitute and she does not know where even to turn while the IRS has him in prison. You're going to find that your prison system is just like the confounded IRS. It is a private corporate business. It's nice to get a bunch of you hard workers into prison. Then you can do work. And you think Chinese prisoners do work that is sold abroad? You don't even take it abroad. Does it flow back into the prison system? Don't be silly. Well, aren't we just a bundle of joy and revelation? Well, you ones haven't done much of anything over the last few centuries, but get deeper in it. I believe Perot calls it voodoo. And he had no idea. You must put your patience to work. You must put yourself on hold before you speak or rant or rave or accuse and most especially judge. I got my ears trimmed with a massive missile 2 days ago from one who had read a couple of liberators, and boy, I sure did need to shape up. or ship out, or whatever. And I could be nicer in the way I tell you. Well, I did that too. For a whole year, I ground your food, I held your hand, and I put it in your little face. Can't do it anymore, Chilas. You see, I could do that for the ones who would then scatter it farther. I warned you as we were becoming reintroduced. My own brothers stand around giggling, you know. Hatton has the worst reputation in the entire cosmos of being a nasty firm commander. And nobody in the living room seemed to understand that. We just were having a great time.
Excuse me, Commander.
Profoundness.
Yes.
Is interrupted.